Yeah. Okay, now we're on. For a minute, I got a little worried there. Okay, today's date is August the 4th, 1998. Just go ahead and state your name.
I'm Joy Sturgill Terhune.
Okay, and let's just, we've been talking for a few minutes, but let's just get started. Tell me where you grew up.
Well, I grew up in Hindman, and my parents were Henry and Susanna Gibson Sturgill, and my father was a merchant, and he had a store there called Sturgill's Department Store. And I had three older siblings, and the oldest was Norcy Sturgill, and she married Woodrow Burchett and spent her life in Prestonsburg, and she's still living. In fact, she's the oldest and I'm the youngest, and we're the only two left in my family. So she's going to be 85 this month, and I'm going to be 72 tomorrow. And the second sister was Maud Evelyn Sturgill, and she married a Combs from down in Molina, but they ended up living in Jeffersonville, Indiana, and she died about 10 years ago. And my third sibling, closest to me, was Bill Zeke Sturgill, William Ezekiel Sturgill, named after his two grandfathers. And he's about 5 years older than I, and I'm sure a lot of people in Hyman would remember him because he was a rounder. He was a lot of fun. He went to World War II with two of the Cornet boys, and was with General Patton all through the war, and was finally severely injured in Germany, and he died about 12, 15 years ago. He was 58 when he died. But I lived there all my life till I graduated from high school in May 1944.
Okay, and you said your father was a merchant there?
He was sheriff at one time.
Oh, wow.
And his twin brother, my Uncle John, was county court clerk. They both were active in politics. But Daddy was, most of his life was spent as a merchant in the store.
What was that like, I guess, being, I guess you're around the store a lot?
Well, not really.
Not really.
I was almost like an only child because my closest sister was 10 years older than and then my brother was 5 years older than I. And so I really wasn't around the store a lot because my mother wasn't there. My mother had polio when I was 9 months old, so she was limited. She would hate me saying that because she never considered herself limited. But she was either on crutches or in a walker or a wheelchair all her life. And, of course, 70 years ago, nobody knew what polio was.
Yeah.
Franklin Roosevelt had it, and that was about it. So when she became ill, they thought she had spinal meningitis. And they brought her to Lexington and ruled that out, and it was polio. So she was down here almost a year, and I was nursing, so I was just an infant, and of course that was before cars, so my father had to try to go back and forth, and family tried to help as much as they could, but many of the good ladies in Hyman took care of me as a baby. Dicey Smith, Phil's mother, and Eva Duke. Dr. Duke was the doctor who delivered all of us, and they lived near us, and Jenny Napier, some of the ladies that you don't remember, but people listening to this would, I'm sure.
Yeah, and the names sound really familiar.
Right, but for about a year, I was kind of farmed out because Daddy couldn't keep help all the time. And that year that Mother had polio, that's, I guess, our real introduction to the settlement school. Because my two sisters and my little brother, who was just 5 or 6 years old, were put in the settlement school. And I guess he was the youngest child to ever be there. And in fact, Otis Cornett was his roommate, and Otis still talks about some of the, they were both very young, and some of the things that they did and so on during those days.
So did they actually live at the campus?
They lived on campus.
Okay.
Our house was across, you know where the little girl's house
would have been.
Our house was across the creek right there. It was called the Old Baker House. It was a yellow house, and it, of course, that bank is all sharp now, but that used to be kind of a sloping place, and there was a house down at the bottom right, and then there was a little bridge that went across the little girl's house. So my two sisters lived in the little girl's house, and my oldest sister, the one who's still living, she was kind of a pet of Miss Ann Cobb, and Miss Cobb just loved her because Norsey was very beautiful, and she was very poetic. She loved to write poetry. And of course, Miss Cobb was a poet. In fact, on my sister's bedside table is one of Miss Cobb's books of poetry to this day. So then when Mother came home, of course, I was still an infant. Mm-hmm. Miss Cobb and Miss Watts, and there was another one who were very fond of my mother, and they used to come often and have tea with her in the afternoon and visit with her and so on. But my sisters were there for about, I would say a year to 18 months while we didn't have a home, actually.
Yeah.
And then we didn't have maids in those days. We had hired girls who came and lived. They were like housekeepers who came and lived in. And so that's the way my father managed during those years. So my sisters were very involved in the settlement school.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I started to school, I went to kindergarten in the old kindergarten building. I remember that. And I remember getting the tablespoon of cod liver oil every day. We all had to line up, and they would give us a big tablespoon of cod liver oil.
Why'd they do that? Just for prevention? Or?
Uh-huh. Well, you know, back in those days, that was during the Depression, remember?
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. But see, I was born in 1926,
yeah.
so it was in the early 30s, when 31, 32, when I was in kindergarten. And I guess, the interesting thing, Marcia and I were talking about this the other day, and the interesting thing is that there was great poverty, I'm sure, but I never was aware of it.
Really?
You know, my father had a daughter in school down here. She went to Science Hill, Shelbyville, the girls' school in Shelbyville. And I remember he just grieved because he wasn't able to give her all the things that she would like to have had. She was there on a scholarship. It's the only way she could have gone.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember walking home with him, sometimes with Hillard Smith, and they both had daughters same age who were away in school, and they both bemoaned the fact that, you know, money was so tight and they couldn't do for their children what they would like to have. But it never affected most of us.
Really?
And I guess I was better off than most, but I don't remember anybody ever talking about being hungry or poor or anything. Right. It just, you know, those first, second, third grades, there was so much love in our families, and we all, everybody had a big extended family, so you didn't feel deprived.
So I guess it's kind of like the community helped.
Yeah.
Helped each other.
Yeah. Right.
I've asked. That's one thing we were trying to find out when doing this was, Jess was like, find out what the Depression years were like, and we were talking. And I was like, so far the people I've talked to that were growing up at that time, it's like the community kind of helped, everybody helped each other.
Oh, it did. And, you know, that year that I was an infant and had to be farmed out, you know, I mean, everybody took care of me.
Yeah.
And it wasn't like I was a charity case. That wasn't it at all. But, I mean, I called every one of them, Aunt Dicey and Aunt Eva and Aunt Jenny, and, you know, they were, and until the day they died. When I would go back to Hindman, I would go see all of them if they were there, and loved them dearly. And until Mother moved away, those ladies were just like sisters to her. I know Mother never lacked for garden stuff, and you know, because everybody would bring it into her and so on. But my association with the settlement school, I never lived there.
Right.
But I remember all my teachers practically up through high school, and then many of them in high school were from the settlement school. I don't remember the name of my kindergarten teacher, but when I moved on to the elementary school, which was the next building over, that old brown building, I remember one of my favorite teachers was a lady, and she was from New England too. Her name was Miss Manthart, and she was... I don't say this unkindly, but she was the typical New Englander, almost what you expect of an old maid school teacher. Mm-hmm. You know, she was very prim and proper and starched and small, petite, but such a stickler. I mean, we diagrammed sentences and we did all sorts of things in third and fourth grade that my children didn't do till junior high or high school.
Yeah.
You know, we were so rigorously trained. And since I've taught school since, I chuckle because, I mean, there was discipline and there was respect for the authorities in our lives. And still, we had a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And then when Mrs. Kiesel was my sixth grade teacher. And Mrs. Kiesel was kind of a tyrant. And my first experience with Mrs. Kiesel was when my brother was in her class, and I was in second grade, and he was a problem. And so my father had an arrangement with Mrs. Kiesel that every day when I got out early, uh-huh. second grade, I would come by her classroom and get a note that would give a report of my brother's behavior that day.
Oh.
And I'll never forget. I just adored my brother. And he bribed me with candy bars called Three Little Pigs. And as I would leave, Ms. Kiesel wore a hearing aid. She couldn't hear well. And she also wore a wig that they stole from her several times and took away. But she was a dear, and I really loved her. But the boys gave her a hard time.
Oh, yeah.
So as I would pass his desk, he would say, "You wait for me. You wait for me." You know, and I would. I'd wait till he got out, and then he'd read the note. So he knew I had to take it, but he wanted to see it before Daddy saw it, so he could get his story straight. And then he would always, we'd go on downtown. He'd buy me a candy bar.
That's a pretty good deal.
Yeah, that's right. My second grade teacher was, I forgot my first grade teacher, but my second grade teacher was Dale Smith, Phil's and Carol's sister.
Uh-huh.
And she had come, and she and my sister were really good friends. So that was a joy because I knew her so well, and we got along so well. And that's when I first remember going to the library. And we would walk across, line up and walk across the bridge to the high school.
Mm-hmm.
And Jim Still was the librarian. He was kind of brand new. He wasn't, he'd been there several years, but
yeah.
He was still a very young man. And I can remember standing there looking up because there was, you know, study hall was over here and here was this big desk. And you didn't go back and look for the books. You just had to tell him what you wanted. And so I would tell him what I wanted. And he would always say, "All right, Miss Joyful," you know, and he would go and get me uh-huh. the books that I wanted and come back. And I'll never forget, I taught here at the university and just retired 2 or 3 years ago, and I taught children's literature. And when he was the author in residence one semester, uh-huh. he came and talked to my children's lit class and read Jack and the Wonder Beans.
Yeah.
And we reminisced about those days. Then in 7th and 8th grade, I had Benny Dyer and Devon Pratt, who were both local people, and I also had Dixie Bailey in 5th grade, and she was a local person. So those were three local people who mm-hmm. were my teachers, but everybody else up through 8th grade was from the settlement school. High school, I guess Lytton Singleton was principal. No, he was superintendent, I guess, when I was in high school. And Miss Glover, Helen Glover, was principal mm-hmm. when I was there. And just 2 or 3 years ago, I had a phone call from the Franklins. The Franklins are the ones who, Garland and Eleanor Franklin, started Camp Nathaniel, Scripture
okay.
Memory Mountain Mission.
Uh-huh.
And they live down in Florida. And we stay in touch with them uh-huh. all the time. And he just died 2 or 3 years ago, but she's still living. But in one of our telephone conversations, he told me that he would go and visit people in the village they lived in Kissimmee.
Yeah.
And he says, "You don't know who I met today." He said, "Helen Glover,
Isn't
the principal."
That weird?
And she had cancer and was very ill and was
oh,
dying.
Yeah.
But he told her, you know, that we stopped by often to see them when we were in Florida, and that he stayed in touch with us. And she said, "If she ever comes while I'm here, be sure and bring her to see me." But we didn't go anymore, and I didn't see her, but I thought, boy, it's a small world, you know.
That really is.
50 years, 60 years later.
And so she was the principal?
She was the principal.
Uh-huh.
During those early 40s, I don't know
yeah.
how long she was there after I left, but I left in May of 44, but she was principal then.
Yeah. What was she like? I mean, as far as like a disciplinary figure, I don't know, I guess, what did y'all think of her?
Well, I worked for her. I worked in the office, and
uh-huh.
I liked her very much.
Okay.
But she wasn't a strong disciplinarian.
Mm-hmm.
Pearl Combs was the coach then,
mm-hmm.
and Pearl really handled a lot of that sort of thing. We had two or three men on the faculty. And Betty Combs, she was Betty Burroughs, who
yeah.
married Pearl, had come during that period. She came when I was in the fifth grade. And a friend came with her named Jean Davis. And Jean was the piano teacher, and I played the piano. So
oh, okay.
So they both came from Oberlin and so on. And then Pearl and Betty fell in love and got married, so of course, and stayed. So I stayed in touch with Betty till she died, because
mm-hmm.
she was here a lot because she was at Marsh's a lot.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of some of the... Well, one of the things that I remember, and now having taught in high school, I look back on it as a good thing. Back in those days, home economics was required. You had to have 2 years of home ec.
Yeah.
And manual training. It was woodworking. It was called manual
mm-hmm.
training, and there was a separate building for that. And I'll never forget... learning to cook and trying to learn to sew. And my mother sewed beautifully. And I never learned to sew because she always did it.
Yeah.
You know, and every time I'd say, well, I'm going to learn to do this summer, she'd say, well, let me show you. And, of course, by the time she showed me, I had lost interest and never did. But those were some good lessons. And one of the things that we had to do, we had a lesson in, a unit, I guess it was, in first aid and nursing.
Oh, really?
And
huh.
we had to go to they still had a hospital, you know, that's now the guest house
mm-hmm.
at this school. But that was the hospital. And Miss Standish was the person who taught us that. And that's where I learned to make a hospital bed. And we learned all those kinds of things up there. And it was, you know, very practical kinds of things that we did. One of the fun things was being involved in all the traditional dance. I wasn't athletic, but I loved that. And then we had the Maypole every year, and then we had the May Queen every year. And my senior year, I was the May Queen, and that was fun. And I took piano from Miss Ruth White forever and ever, you know, from the time she came till I left. And in fact, when I went away to college, I majored in piano. I dropped it and switched to English, but
mm-hmm.
I loved to play the piano, and I had very good training from her. She was excellent.
Yeah, what was Miss White? I mean, I've heard her name.
She was a piano teacher.
Yeah, and I've heard her mentioned, but could you give a physical description of what she
Miss White was very shy and very... She was small and a bit plump,
uh-huh.
But she gave lessons in her apartment, which was the building where you have apartments now.
That kind of slopes down the hill.
Right.
Yeah.
What's that called?
I think, I just call it the apartment. So every time, I'm trying to think, I think we call it the Elizabeth Watts building.
Okay, well, it had another name then. Hillside? I think Hillside.
I think it was Hillside.
Yeah.
And they redid it.
But
yeah.
That's where she was. And we paid 25 cents a lesson for our piano lessons.
Yeah. Wow.
And, you know, I still can remember her going, she had stacks of music that was her personal stuff. We
yeah.
never bought music because she used her things. But Max Cody took from her, and Phil, and Ray Tudor, and Marcia, and, you know, there's a whole bunch of us, and we had recitals, and people came, and, you know, we had a really good program. And, of course, we were all in the Glee Club, and we did a lot with that. But Miss White was really a sweet, sweet person, very, very caring. I liked her a lot. Another teacher that was there then who taught typing and bookkeeping was a lady named Miss Frizzell, F-R-I-Z-Z-E-L-L.
Where was she from?
She was from New England, and she was a friend of Miss Glover's.
Mm-hmm.
mm-hmm. Had come when she came. And then Miss Standish went on to become the librarian after Jim Still left. And then we built the new library, the stone building that, what's that used for now, the stone building?
It's now the James Still Learning Center.
Okay.
For dyslexic children.
Right. Well, that's that was the library, and we as a part of our English classes, we went over and did research, and she taught us how to use the library mm-hmm. and all that sort of thing. She was a very, very intellectual person, very structured, and you just don't find that kind anymore.
Yeah.
You know, I really. And, you know, I think back so often to, because I went from high school and never worked hard but did well. In fact, my last year I only went half a day because my father was very ill. He had a stroke, and we, mother and I, took care of him at home, and he had to be moved and changed and all that so often. And so she took care of him at night, and I would come home in the afternoon, and so she could sleep, and, mm-hmm. and then I took care of him in the afternoon. And we had help. We had, because he had bed sores, and you know. We had to change linens often. So we had a Mrs. Sizemore who came every day, and she just did loads and loads of laundry. In fact, I was over at P-Rats just now and saw this old Ringer washing machine, mm-hmm. Maytag washing machine. And so I asked him, what's the best washing machine you have? He says, the Maytag. And I said, well, I used to have one like that right out there, so I can vouch for that. But she just washed all the time because we just had to keep changing. And he couldn't speak. He'd lost his voice. So it was a hard 2 years. But anyway, I only went to school half a day, and I still did well. But then I was kind of cocky. I thought I was hot stuff.
Yeah.
And I went away to school, to Wheaton College up in Illinois, which is very tough academically.
Yeah, I've heard of it.
And I was no longer a big fish in a little pond. I was...
And,
you know, I'm sure you had this when you went away to college. You know, you've got classes Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and you've got all this blocks of free time. Mm-hmm. And my first semester, I really, really struggled because I got behind in everything because I just thought I had it. I thought I could do anything. I found out that I couldn't.
Mm-hmm.
But as I look back on it, you know, I was able to survive and I was able to do well because of my background, because I had good teachers. And you know, I was put in competition with people from all over the country from very good schools, mm-hmm. and I felt like I could do as well as they did. So I've always been grateful for that.
Mm-hmm.
As a matter of fact, back when I was in college, some kind of a survey was done, and I guess it was after I was back here and after I was through school, and I looked at some research, and it showed that, and this was probably back in the 60s when I saw this, that of all the counties in Kentucky, Knott County had the highest number of people who graduate from college.
Wow.
And that was, you know, because of Alice Lloyd.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because they could go to Alice Lloyd for 2 years and then come down here, and Alice Lloyd had a house. I mean, Caney had a house for him to live in and so on. So I don't think that's true anymore.
Yeah, probably not. But at that time, yeah, I'd say that definitely was.
Because the settlement school was still had quite an influence back in the 50s,
mm-hmm.
and I think it had an impact on the others. But those were good days, and I think the settlement school had such an impact and influence not only on me personally and my family, but on the whole area, and continues to. I'm so proud of what your father's been able to do with this. It's really good. I'm probably rattling on.
No, that's you're doing a fine. I don't want to interrupt you all.
Mm.
No, that's just fine. I mean, it's like I told you, I've done 40-some of these, but it's like every time I learn something new or hear a new story. And I think it's so neat that even though you didn't live on the campus, you were so much a part of that campus and those people, especially, I mean, like, you know, the ladies would come and have tea at your house.
Mm-hmm.
Did you get to know Miss Watts very well?
I knew Miss Watts well because Miss Watts was very fond of my mother.
Yeah.
And in fact, I went down. Marcia and Billy have a cottage down near London during that way, and we were going to go see Miss Watts because I bought a book where there was a a description of the foundation. I've forgotten who did it, but I got an extra copy and had the person autograph it to Miss Watts mm-hmm. because it talked about her and the contribution she had made. So I wrote to her and told her, you know, that sometime when I was going through Knoxville, I'd like to stop by and bring it. So when Marcia and I went down one weekend, just the two of us went, we called and we were going to go, and she was real delighted to see us. And then she called that morning and she was ill.
Oh.
And so we didn't go. But and then I didn't get back for her birthday or, mm-hmm. you know, any of the other things. But I had great admiration for her. I thought she was a wonderful woman mm-hmm. and kind of a role model for, particularly yeah. for those of us who went into education and began teaching and so on, because she gave you she was such an example of the importance of education and of her willingness to devote her life to that when she didn't have to.
Yeah.
You know, and it was hard work and struggles, serious struggles.
Mm-hmm.
My aunt was at the settlement school for a while, and one of her favorite stories, she's gone now too. She would be over 100 now, but when she lived there, Miss Pettit and Miss Watts were, you know, it was all that one big building where you all are now,
yeah.
primarily. And everybody had to work, and they all had chores and jobs to do. And she said when your assignment was to set the table, that you were supervised so closely. And she said that I've forgotten who it was who supervised her, but she said they would stand there like a martinet, you know, and watch you. And you had a tray with silverware on it, mm-hmm. and you had a tray with cutlery on, with dishes on it, and china and so on. And if a piece of silverware touched a piece of cutlery and there was a clink, I mean, that was a demerit. You know, that was, it was supposed to be placed just so. And she says, this is where she learned how to set the table properly with the fork
yeah.
on the left and the spoon and the napkin folded just so and the fold to the outside and the glass at the tip of the knife. And, you know, all those things were emphasized. And I think a lot of us who had mothers or aunts or sisters who were involved in that, a lot of the things that we have that are considered proper were learned as a result of the queer women
yeah.
who came and taught mm-hmm. that. But it was a wonderful era.
What did you think about your teachers, the fact that they came, I guess not the local ones, but that so many of them did come to New England? What was the general feeling about that, or was there any?
Wasn't any, because that's all we had known.
Yeah.
You know, Marcia and Kathleen and all of us grew up with nothing but the settlement school teachers, with one or two exceptions. Pearl was local, Pearl Combs. Dixie Bailey taught she taught in the high school too, because I had her for an American history class. I'll never forget one time in my life I snuck out and cut class and went up the hill to a car that was parked up on the bank. And it was after the war had started.
Uh-huh.
This was 1941 or two,
yeah.
42, I guess. And the fella I was dating was home. So the two of us, the two girls, went up and met them at the top and went somewhere. But see, I had to be home very early because my father was very ill.
Mm-hmm.
So I couldn't go anywhere at night or anything. I had this one little block of time.
Yeah.
So that evening, I walked with my mother out to the front of the Sheldon Maggard's store, because Daddy had become ill and he'd sold the store to Maggard's. And we lived in an apartment back of that. And I remember Mother was standing there talking to somebody, and Miss Bailey came along.
Okay, I'll pause it. There we go.
And looked at me just so deliberately, you know, and I was quaking because I had never done a thing like cut a class in my life. And she looked at did a lot of that. But she put on a Christmas pageant. And from the time I was second grade till I graduated from high school, I was the angel that said, "Behold, I bring you good tidings of great joy, for unto you shall be born." And anyway, I was tall and I was blonde,
uh-huh.
You know, so I always had that part, and that was such fun. And we put on several plays during the year because that was, you know, it was just kept us busy and active. Mm-hmm. So the Settlement School played a great part in that I think is missing now.
Mm-hmm.
High school may still do that. But there was such quality in what we did. And of course, there weren't as many of us.
Mm-hmm.
And so because there were fewer of us, more of us were involved in more things.
Yeah.
But the Christmas pageant was the biggie of the year. And everybody in that community came to the Christmas pageant.
Wow.
And they put on the Christmas play. And then after the play, then Santa Claus came. And there was a huge tree. And Hillard Smith was always handed out the presents. And that was Phil's, you know, Phil Smith.
Mm-hmm.
That was Phil's father. Phil was the youngest, and I was the youngest, so we were very close. And but Hillard had this big sonorous voice, and he would call out the names. And every child in that school got a present. And it wasn't just, you know, a homemade. I mean, it wasn't just a bought-on stocking with something. It was a wrapped gift with a name on it.
Yeah.
And of course, as you got older, that was the time, if you had a secret boyfriend or a girlfriend, they could put a gift under the tree and you'd get it,
uh-huh.
You know, because they probably wouldn't feel comfortable taking it to your home or whatever. And sometimes they were from your secret admirer or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
But everybody just sat rapt because you knew that your name was going to be called. I mean, your name was going to be called, and it wasn't parents who put those under there. It was the Settlement School or just a group who got together and took the roles of the school, and everybody got a present.
So this was just a community.
This was a community. This was a big community thing, and it could have been that the courthouse gave money for that. You know, that there was tax money or whatever. I don't know, but I don't know where the money came from. But all I know is that every year for 12 years, I sat there and waited for my name to be called and got a present. And it was just a really wonderful time. And then graduations were always so special. And then, you know, the May Day thing with the May Queen. And it was just a lot of things that I often think about. I had sons. I didn't have a daughter. But I think about their school days. And while there were neat things, there were just so many special things that I had that they didn't have.
Yeah.
And I think it's the result of the Settlement School, because I have friends who grew up in Allen and Prestonsburg and Hazard and all these other places, and they didn't have the quality of things that we had at all.
Hmm. That's neat to hear about the Christmas thing. Like, people have told me different versions of that, maybe the play and things,
mm-hmm.
but I didn't realize that the entire community
mm-hmm.
came to that, so that's pretty neat.
It was. I mean, the gym floor, the chairs were out, and the gym was filled, and the bleachers,
mm-hmm.
and it was always very, very well attended. And graduations were so well attended, you know, because these were big events.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was one of the few things that everybody had a chance to go to, And then we were such a small community that people who didn't even have children in school anymore still participated and supported events because we were all so close.
Yeah.
And that made it special.
Well, I guess thinking back on, I mean, the stuff you share with me has just been great. I mean, I feel like I don't even need to ask any questions. You've told me.
Well, bless you. I talk too much.
No. You could never talk too much through one of these, I promise you. But I guess thinking back on it now, I mean, just listening to you talk, I can tell how much the Settlement School means to you.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess after you went, being away from it and things, when you think about the Settlement School, what things stand out in your mind? I mean, what are like the... Or if there is anything that you could even mm-hmm. sum up that mm-hmm. way.
Well, I think of some of the stories that my siblings told about the times that they lived there, that
yeah.
some of them are humorous. And
yeah.
The last time I went to, I haven't been to one of the alumni things for a couple of years, but the, I guess since 94 when
uh-huh.
my class was honored. And I'll never forget, Otis Cornett came up to me and he asked, he says, every time I see you, I think of Bill Zeke. And I said, yeah. I said, Bill Zeke loved you. And he said, I like that old fella, too. He said, I never did tell you this, and I shouldn't put this on the tape. But he says, we had to sleep together
uh-huh.
at little boy's house. And, of course, my brother was 6 years old, and
uh-huh.
Otis was a little bit older, I guess. And he says, you know, when he first came over there, every night he wet the bed.
Oh. So, bless his heart.
He said, you know, he was so traumatized
right.
with everything
yeah.
that had happened. And so I said something back to my sister, my older sister, who
uh-huh.
was 14 probably at the time.
Yeah.
And she said, oh, that's right, he did.
Oh.
And she said every morning she'd have to leave the little girl's house and go over and strip the bed
for
and
him.
hang the sheets out, you know, because he had an accident. But Otis says, that Bill Zeke, he used to blanket blank on me every night. But they were good friends.
Yeah. That probably happened to a lot of little ones.
Mm.
I can't imagine.
Mm-hmm.
Bless his heart. I'm sorry, we're going
to go ahead.
Do you keep in touch? I guess you pretty much keep in touch with what's going on at the settlement now. Or
yes,
I try to.
Uh-huh. And of course, since Marcia moved back here from Cleveland,
uh-huh.
It's just been wonderful because I go that way more often. I still go to Prestonsburg often because I have a sister who lives in Prestonsburg. So
uh-huh.
sometimes I'll go through Hyman or Marcia will go up with me and we'll see that. And then I went for 3 or 4 years. Went to the alumni thing almost annually with her because she loves to go back.
Yeah.
But I just don't know a lot of people anymore. You
yeah.
know.
Yeah.
I still know Lib Smith and Virginia uh-huh. Combs, who never changes. Neither of them
no,
ever
they
changed.
Don't.
And a few people downtown, but so many. Audrey Mullins, I still know. She was in my class,
mm-hmm.
and she's still active. But there just aren't
yeah.
a lot of them left.
Right.
We're all getting old.
Nah, I don't think so.
But I'm hoping that as I learn how to retire, my husband and I are just finally relaxing enough to think, hey, you know, we don't have to rush as much.
Right.
We don't have to be as. But it seems like every day's full.
Yeah.
I'm so busy.
Yeah. Well, what do you think about the changes that have gone on at the settlement school? Because it is a totally different place.
It is totally different. And I just have great admiration for the fact that somebody's had the vision to create a program that fits the needs of the community
mm-hmm.
and also utilize the facilities in the manner that they've been utilized. I think Lois Weinberg and her recognition of the dyslexia problem and the need for that kind of a program and then your father's and the board's interest and ability to carry it on are I just think that's incredible that it all fit together that well and I think that there's some strands of continuity that I think are wonderful and that's Jim still being there
uh-huh.
you know and he sort of a thread that runs through. There's a book that Edith Schaefer wrote, and I don't know whether you know anything about Edith Schaefer, but Frances and Edith Schaefer established an oasis for troubled kids over in the Alps called La Brie, and a lot of kids who, this during the drug culture,
yeah.
Got involved with them, and they're great theologians and very practical family-oriented people too, but her husband's dead now, and she wrote a book that I just love called The Tapestry, and I love the mm-hmm. symbolism, but she talks about, she went back to the time to her family and Francis' family and sort of paralleled their lives until they merged and became one and established their own family, and she talks about it as a tapestry,
mm-hmm.
and that as you look back, you can see that there's certain threads that become more prominent,
right.
and that they're woven through your life,
mm-hmm.
and make such a beautiful pattern. And of course, that fits right in with tapestries and weaving and Hyman fit right in together. But I think there's certain threads in my vision and my tapestry of my life that certainly a strong scarlet thread that flows from the beginning and continues to flow would be my association with the Settlement School and the influence it's had on my life. And it's a real strong feeling I have about it. And I think when my life is over, if somebody could see that tapestry, they would see that,
yeah,
that symbol.